Hi there. Thanks for listening to Alt Latino. NPR's politics podcast is where NPR's political reporters talk to you like they talk to each other. With weekly roundups, short takes on news, and reporting from every stop on the campaign trail, you don't have to keep up with politics to know what's happening this election year. You just have to keep up with them. Listen and subscribe to NPR's politics podcast at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. That music's the sound of the new animated TV show called Border Town. It's a comedy that airs Sunday nights on Fox Network.
Now, joining us to talk about the show, its creation, and what it takes to write culturally relevant comedy are our friends Lalo Alcaraz and Gustavo Arellano. Guys, welcome.
Hola, Felix.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Lalo Alcaraz is consulting producer for Border Town and is more well-known as the creator of the syndicated comic strip La Cucaracha. He joins us from radio station KPCC in Pasadena, California. And Gustavo Arellano is a consultant on the show, but his main gig is as the creator and writer of the advice column Ask a Mexican, which is published in the OC Weekly in Orange County, California. He is also editor of the paper. He joins us from KUCI and from the campus of UC Irvine.
Yeah.
Okay. The storyline features a successful Mexican immigrant and his next-door neighbor, a Border Patrol agent who's slightly freaked out about all the cultural changes taking place in his neighborhood and across the United States. And it all takes place in a fictitious desert town near the U.S. border called Mexifornia. I want to start with a clip that illustrates the theme of the show, as we talked about it earlier, relationship between the Latinos and the U.S., but with a very, very serious, sarcastic streak.
I used to be someone in this town. My dad owned the biggest flower shop on the strip, right across from the freeway. All you had to do was pull off the exit, park your car, buy some flowers. Couldn't get more convenient. And then Alejandro changed the game.
Alejandro is changing the game all over the country.
Yeah, that clip was Hank Azaria doing the voice of Bud Buchwald. He's the worst Border Patrol agent probably in the Western Hemisphere, and he's a working class white guy that he's middle aged and he feels like the country is slipping away from him. You know, you've heard the phrase "take our country back." I mean, Bud lives this every day, and there he was bemoaning the fact of he blames immigrants for ruining his father's flower selling business, was it flowers or oranges? I'm blanking out.
But, flowers. Alejandro always sells flowers. It's Alex.
Yeah,
who
that's
sells
right.
Oranges.
And so, yeah, the show. I mean, it is set in a border town, Mexifornia, which is more of a symbol, more of a placeholder for this demographic change that the country's experiencing right now.
Let's talk a little bit more about each character because they seem to represent a certain segment of society and sometimes even a stereotype.
When it comes to Border Town, it's obviously a cartoon, but it's also a sitcom. So every character is going to embody a particular trope, whether it be in Mexican culture or American culture. So let's start with the Mexican family, the Gonzalez family. Ernesto Gonzalez, your typical hardworking Mexican immigrant, came to this country undocumented from Jerez, Zacatecas, where Lalo and I are from, because we're not biased at all about getting in our background into the show. So he's he came with nothing, and now he owns his own successful land. Landscaping company. So that's the dad. Then you have his dad, Placido, your typical Mexican abuelito who's angry at life and calls all white people gringos because, hey, isn't that what all our abuelitos do? Then you have the wife, Maria, of course, the classic name, Maria. We have to develop more of a backstory for her, but at least in the biography right now, also worked for a long time until she got laid off because of NAFTA. NAFTA destroyed many lives for working class people in the United States, especially that of Mexican Americans. Then you have your oldest son, Ruiz. He's a stoner, loser, early 20s guy, and we made him out into be a metalero, mixed with the theme of this part, or with Alt Latino, so he's into like Pantera, Brujeria, Megadeth, because we all have that metalero cousin, of course. And then finally, but not leastly, the youngest son, Pepito. And of course, Pepito, our listeners of this show will already know, he is this trickster character in Mexican comedy. Except because this is broadcast humor, he's not going to say these gratuitously hilarious sexual jokes like the real Pepito does in Mexican comedy, but be more of your Pip, your Dennis the Menace.
And the friction is played out in some clever writing. I want to play another clip because this is one that I think also speaks to the theme of the show.
You don't want to be late.
Why, so I can suffer another day of insults and indignities? You know, I was always told that if I worked for the man long enough, eventually I'd become the man. Well, I've been working at that station 20 years, but I ain't the man. Steve is. Even Ernesto is the boss of his grass thingy. It's like the Mexican has become the man, and I've become the Mexican.
That's the way of the world.
Did you ever worry that some of the characters would be like a little too stereotypical?
No, in my very long experience of drawing comics with realistic characters, of course people are going to say, oh, you can't have a taco cart guy because that's a stereotype. Oh, well, he exists, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't have a gardener because that's a stereotype. My dad was a gardener. You know, I find nothing wrong with portraying a gardener. I know that it's a problem when the only characters on a show are gardeners or maids. But in our case, you know, we have a variety. We have, Ernesto's owns a landscape business. You know, his nephews went to Berkeley and came back.
Mm-hmm,
and he's pompous. His name is JC. And
yeah, the newscaster, Carlos Sanchez, he's going to be the newscaster. There's nothing really Mexican about him except his brown skin and his name. Otherwise, he's just like, hi, I'm Carlos Sanchez, your typical Jerry Dunphy, Kent Brockman, a clone of that. So I agree with Lalo. It's interesting because, you know, of course, this show has already had some criticisms from some folks. Some people saying, oh, well, you had to make him a gardener. Of course you did. And our response to that was Ernesto's working class. Like any job that we could have given him that's working class, people would have been upset. Make him a truck driver? Oh, of course. Yeah, you're saying all Mexicans are truck drivers. Make him a construction worker, you know, a plumber, whatever. So we figured, okay, we're going to make him a gardener. Might as well make him own that. But I think one of the best compliments we've received, Lalo wasn't here, but myself and Mark, we aired this at a art college in Santa Monica. So it's all these, you know, kids working graphic designs and whatnot. After we screened an episode, three young men come up to us and they tell me, and Mark, why did you decide to make him a landscaper? Then we explained why. And they're like, we're the sons of landscapers.
Right.
You nailed Ernesto's profession perfectly. Did you guys hire a landscaper as a consultant for this show?
Just the son of one.
It's interesting. I mean, do you feel like this that same sort of PC culture within the intellectual Latino community is dampening creativity in a way?
It doesn't dampen mine. I mean, I feel every time someone tells me to shut up, I just turn up the volume louder. So if you're an artist worth your salt, you're not going to do your work by commission. You know, you just can't, because that's going to kill comedy and thinking.
I call those people armchair Aztecs. These are people who are so removed from the day-to-day life of actual Mexicanos that they don't know that Mexicans, we have some of the darkest, most hilarious humor in the world. Who's making fun about narcos and all the decapitations? Mexicans. Who's making jokes about Enrique Peña Nieto and his corrupt administration? Mexican. Who's doing like memes about Los 43 and everything miserable about Mexican society since forever? Mexicans. Who is the most famous Mexican comedian of all time? Cantinflas. And what was his humor? His humor was being among the poorest of the poor in Tepito, the most notorious, colonia in Mexico City. So when people say, how dare we make fun of what's going on in our society, that runs counter to the whole Mexican experience. Of course, the most important thing is when you do take on a topic comedically, you should always be punching up and you should never be punching down. And I think that's one thing that Lalo and I, in our respective careers, we've never done that. And that's one thing in Border Town that we have striven to make sure that if we're going to be punching about sensitive subjects, we always punch up at the oppressors and never down at the oppressed.
The most popular Mexican kids show of all time was Chespirito,
right.
You know, which features
really
Chavo del Ocho,
he's
an orphan
who lives in a barrel.
You know, lives in a barrel and is abused by all the neighbors. You know,
gets
like
beaten up.
Mexicans
all the time.
Find that funny because
all
we
of Latin
laugh
America
at tragedy.
Finds that funny.
Exactly, and you know, it's part of who our culture is. But I do agree. You know, if I want to find one nugget of truth in those armchair Aztecs, it's that, you know, at least know what you're criticizing and do it right. And with Border Town, we definitely feel that we're doing it great.
The humor is appreciated based on your cultural perspective. If you're missing that cultural perspective, then it's not going to be funny. I want to play a clip of one of the things that I thought was pretty damn funny. The setup is J.C. Juan Carlos gets deported to Mexico, and he's walking down the street, and he sees a lady who sees the Virgen de Guadalupe and the tortilla.
I was just going to talk about
it. Okay, hold on.
Es la Virgen de Guadalupe en mi tortilla.
Oh, come on. The Virgin Mary is not in your tortilla. Stop doing this. It only reinforces a negative cultural stereotype.
I like Mexican food. You got a problem with that? That's for not believing in me, pocho. Boom, you just got male pattern baldness.
She's floating up to heaven as she kicks JC's ass and takes his wallet.
It's
the Virgen, if it's not clear.
What's funny to me about it is, you know, just the idea that the Virgen would come out and start punching people and stealing money, right? But also, as she ascends up into heaven, she starts to lose her accent a little bit. You know what I mean? She's like, that's all right. You got male pattern baldness.
To be honest, it was one of the bits that made me freak out. And I said, oh, no, this one, it's hilarious. But people are going to riot in the streets after they watch it. And I could not have been more wrong. My boss smartly kept it in, didn't listen to me on this one.
And we should mention real quick that the boss is writer Mark Henteman, who created the show. The executive producer for Bordertown is Hollywood writer Seth MacFarlane.
I have a friend whose mom's like 70 and rarely compliments anything. And she said, well, I didn't like anything except the Virgin and the tortilla. That was pretty good, you know. So I missed it on that one.
Well, we're talking about feedback. What about feedback from the industry? Now, what has it been like from people in the television industry or the entertainment industry in general? What has the reaction been to this Latino-themed show?
It's interesting because there's been a lot of talk about the lack of diversity of television, and there's been, you know, campaigns by stars like, say, Cristel Alonso and Gina Rodriguez to be promoting each other's shows. But in terms of, like, you know, George Lopez gave us a shout out. He said something that I can't repeat, but, you know, F the haters. I think we could air that. But he tweeted that out. Cristela's always been a big proponent of it. Within the industry itself, it's interesting because, you know, without revealing too much about sort of the internal fun that Lalo and I get to have with executives, some executives think this is great, and some other people think that this is a little bit touchy. If anything, it mimics the same battles that were going on with All in the Family and back in the 1970s, or even in Living Color in the 1990s. You know, shows that were, I would argue, ahead of its time, very much touching on these sensitive issues. And when you do talk about sensitive issues, some people are going to be a little bit freaked out about that. So I think the important thing is having people in the writer's room or having people as producers to be able to mitigate those concerns that people have by putting out the best possible product imaginable.
Let's talk about your roles in the show specifically. You have specific titles. How does that play out? Where are you able to have influence in the show?
Gustavo and I were both like part-timers in the beginning. And Gustavo, because he only runs like a newspaper, you know, he's a little busy. I'm pretty busy. I do my comic strip, but this has always been a dream of mine, is to have a show like this. And God, man, I got dropped right into primetime television. And you know, there's five Latino writers on this show, which is revolutionary, I think, in American primetime television, maybe a world record. You know, we were on the ground floor of this thing. You know, we were, you know, like Gustavo said, we got to write the bio for the family. I got to design the interior of the homes, you know, the Mexican home, which I packed with every conceivable cliche, you know, like plastic-covered couches and Aztec calendars and all that great stuff. So we had a lot of, you know, influence, and the show creator, you know, actually listens to us, which, I mean, I'm not used to that. Yeah, I'm not used to people listening to me. If we find like a Mexican angle on something that could be more Mexicanized, man, it usually gets the green light from the boss, you know, because he wants, you know, his thing is he wants to do honest comedy. You know, he's said it. He's quoted, you know, I didn't want to be the white guy writing the Latino show, you know, and that's why we got an ensemble of us, you know, five Latino writers and a group of super experienced, you know, TV writers. We have Valentina Garza, who wrote 6 years on The Simpsons, you know, and So, I mean, what an asset to our show.
And then Vanessa Ramos, she's writing jokes for Chris Rock's Oscar monologue. So we have some and then another guy, Isaac Gonzalez, sold the show to NBC with Eugenio Derbez. So it was a great collection. And then my job specifically, it's weird because it's consulting producer, which means it's part-time. And usually in Hollywood, that means it's a job for the friend of the executive producer to just get a paycheck and do nothing. But that's not how I work. So when I started on the show, I told Mark, what do you want me to do? Like, do you want me to read scripts and give you advice? And he's like, look, you could only work with me part-time, but I consider you a writer, so just put as much effort into it as possible or as little as you want to do. So me being me, I'd go up there 2 to 3 times a week, just hang out in the writer's room, pitch jokes, and, you know, I eventually ended up writing my own episode about, surprise, surprise, being a pocho and the problems that happen in this country when you're a pocho. But, you know, I think it's a testament to Mark that he not only, as I always tell people, 95% of the concerns Lalo and I had about, say, a joke or a premise, Mark sided with us, like, without question. The other 5%, you know, we had to take some convincing for him to do it, but almost always he listened to what we had to say.
Who do you imagine your audience to be? Who is the target audience? And do you think, you know, we all know Latinos are a very diverse group of people and there's more and more Central American immigration coming in. I mean, do you think someone from a Salvadoran family can watch this cartoon and crack up? Who is that audience that you're looking for?
Anyone who cares about Mexicans in the United States, which nowadays is everyone in the United States. If you have even the inkling of interest or fear about Mexicans in this country, then Bordertown is for you, just on a superficial level. If you like smart comedy, Bordertown is for you. I mean, we have a who's who of comedy writers, people from Mr. Show and all that. Go ahead.
Do you think that someone who's anti-immigration, like that Border Patrol agent, might laugh at it?
There was a guy on Twitter with a Confederate flag profile picture who said, "This show is effing hilarious," which means liberals will take it down.
Not to push on the armchair. What did you call?
Armchair Aztecs.
I thought I was going to say armchair Zapatista.
No. Don't insult the Zapatistas that way.
But do you ever worry, like kind of a Dave Chappelle type thing? Do you ever worry with a creation like this? Do you wonder, are people laughing with me or are people laughing at me?
Well, I have to deal with this a lot, this comment, where I actually had a lady at a show say, you know, I'm concerned that people are going to see, you know, this cartoon image and white supremacists are going to see it and they're going to hate us, you know, and
well,
use it.
Too late.
You know, and I'm like, white supremacists, A, they already hate us. You know, racists already hate us. And it's not going to turn anybody into a racist. I mean, but, you know, we don't make our art and ask permission of white supremacists. You know, is this going too far? You know, are you going to run with this? And, you know, you can't operate like that, you know, because a white supremacist walk down the street and see a Taco Bell and be like, I hate Mexicans, you know? So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, if haters are going to enjoy the show and laugh at it, they're not going to be laughing at the Mexicans so much that they're going to be laughing at our no-holds-barred approach to both conservatives and liberals. So what the guy was saying at that particular point, he liked our skewering of liberal ideology. So, you know, we make fun, of course, of Fox News and their bloviating insanity, but we also make fun of Bill Maher, who, you know, he's so easy to make fun. We have a character named Bob Mothers that is a direct clone of him. J.C. Gonzalez, he's your classic insufferable, you know, liberal. He's basically the meathead of our show from All in the Family. And if anything, people have criticized us. They've said, oh, you know, this show can't be trusted because it equates xenophobia with liberalism, which we're like, of course we don't. If you actually see the show, the target of our ridicule are the haters, the know-nothings. But for us to not be able to make fun of our side as well, then that just shows that we're being hacks at that point. If you cannot find humor, again, going back to this argument about Mexicans can't make fun about, you know, situation on the U.S.-Mexico border. If you can't find humor in your own side, then frankly, you're not human and you're a blowhard.
Speaking of ridiculing people who have that kind of hate in their heart or misunderstanding the world, I want to play another clip, okay? It's about the Judaism, or how do you say it?
Nah.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Hola, bud. Happy Sunday. Wow, nice jacket.
It's for being an usher, the most important job in the church. If there had been an usher at the Last Supper, Jewish would not have been given a seat.
I think his name was Judas.
Yeah, that's what I said, Judish, as in the Judes, the people that killed Jesus. They named their religion after him, Judaism. It's a well-known historical fact.
Yeah, what's not funny about idiots? Come on. You know.
That was part of an episode called Megachurch, in which we take on an important subject that's going on right now, the loss of Latinos in the Catholic Church to evangelical movements.
I think that JC said it perfectly about the relationship between the megachurches and Latinos.
What the hell is happening? My church has been taken over!
Bienvenidos, everyone! Let us join in prayerful celebration in the name of our Lord, Jesus Christ. Our first hymn will be sung by Ernesto Gonzalez.
Ave Maria.
Becky, hold up your old man. He's having a stroke. Everything's fading to brown.
You're not having a stroke. Your profit-minded church is trying to capitalize on the growing Mexican population. It's called hispandering.
I don't even recognize my own church anymore. I think I'm having a panic attack.
Relax, honey. Just take some of your anti-Mexiety medicine.
This is a trend that's been happening across Latin America now for decades, especially in Brazil. It's I think it's almost as Pentecostal now as it is Catholic.
Why
but
do you
that
think we
said,
finally got a Latin American pope?
Exactly.
Oh, and he makes an appearance on the
and
show.
Yes, and so. that particular episode, we have Pope Francis using his holy chancla to get Mexicans back into the Catholic Church.
What the hell's going on here?
Hola, Pope!
Hola, hola, hola Pope. Pope!
Don't hola, Pope me! You Latinos get your butts back to the Catholic Church! Vamanos! Don't make me use the Pope chancla! Dominus Sanctus Chanclatus.
Show off.
So it's easy to concentrate on the gibberish jokes on, oh, you know, the Virgen de Guadalupe here and that, but you see the entirety of our season, and we're talking about topics that are basically ripped from the headlines. What other show right now on American television is talking about the rise of evangelicism among Mexicans? No other show. You know, what other show is going to take on, you know, the Santa Ana winds, wildfires, pochismo, you know, what are some of the other episodes we did, Lalo, some of the big ones? Border Wall, duh, Lalo's show, Border Wall.
Yeah, you know, people were asking, did Donald Trump co-write this episode? It's like, well, you know, almost.
I loved the scene in the church when everybody looked at Tio Ernesto about his perspective on the wall.
Build the wall!
Border Wall!
Border Wall!
Uncle Ernesto, people respect you. You gotta speak up.
Shh! I came to the U.S. because it is a place where everyone's voice can be heard and counted. Our democratic system here may not be perfect, but I'll take it over the corrupt system I left behind. I trust this open forum of debate will result in the right decision for our town. So in conclusion, Gonzalez Landscaping, we love you long time!
What is up with that dude that keeps getting taken by aliens? Because, I mean, like, so we've been talking about race and, like, ethnicity and the border and no sé qué más, but what's up with that guy?
You know, the show has another angle to it, which will be explored later on in the season. But it's set in the desert, and it's kind of set in a Area 51 type setting. So that's why there's flying saucers. That's why there's a mutant, a neighbor across the street who's got a head for a foot and his face is in his stomach. And that's why Bryce is so weird and he's kind of dating aliens, you know. And so... To put it politely.
I do have to say you guys captured so well, like, that feeling of, for those of us who are from California, or from Southern California especially, that feeling of, like, this concrete oasis in the middle of the desert, and it's so hot, and it's dry, and you try to get out, and it's like, oh, it's the desert. Get me out of here.
I mean, this is a satire of the American Southwest, more specifically. Broadly, it's about, you know, the border, but specifically it's going to be a satire of the American Southwest. So what do we obsess about in the American Southwest? You have the military-industrial complex. You have random UFO abductions. So that's a total shout-out to Roswell, Area 51, to the New Mexico folks out there. You're going to have this obsession with high school football, mega churches. I mean, we have an episode devoted to wildfires. I pitch an episode for the drought. You know, we want to talk about those episodes. So at the very maybe the rest of the rest of the United States won't get that obsession, because a lot of people are like, oh, you're making fun of rape. You know, you're making rape jokes, and how dare you do that? It's like, no, it's not rape jokes. It's alien abduction jokes. I'm sorry, but if you're not from New Mexico or the American Southwest, you don't know that it's a thing in Arizona
Michael
and New
Norrie.
Mexico. Exactly. So
George Norrie, yeah.
George Norrie, sorry. George
Norrie. Bell, man. Art Bell.
Coast to Coast AM, definitely. Exactly. So, that was one episode. Bryce is going to be there. We're going to have a little bit more about aliens later on. But again, it's just going back to not making this a stereotypical show. It would have been so easy to just had a simple show, Mexican family, white family, just have them do Mexican things and white things. That doesn't really, for me at least, what interests me about this show is that we're even more region specific. The jokes that we have, they're funny on its surface, but if you dig deeper, people are going to appreciate it even more. In fact, so far we're getting a lot of feedback from people saying like, oh yeah, we've seen an episode now 2 to 3 times, and it gets funnier every time once you start unwrapping, unpeeling the spool that is our show.
And also, Mexifornia, the town it's set in, is like our Springfield, but right. On the border. So people from every area think, that's like where I'm from. I'm from Calexico, and we put elements of Calexico to art department of Mexicali, and so it's kind of got that Palm Springs, border Chicali feel. But of course Texans all think, oh yeah, this is set in Texas because everything's about Texas.
Yeah, it's Eagle Pass. It's Brownsville. It's El Paso. It's Deming, New Mexico. It's like we say Mexifornia is in Aztlan. That's what it matters. So it's everything and anything. We'll even give shout outs to people from Colorado, for Christ's sakes. You have to.
Yeah.
And finally, it's unrelated to anything other than the fact that I'm a major jazz fan, and I love I loved your jazz joke. Here's that clip.
There you are, bud. You've been in the basement all morning. What are you doing down there?
I'm, making a jazz album. From now on, no one is allowed to go down there.
A jazz album?
Isn't jazz why the government tried to drown New Orleans?
What about work? Shouldn't you be out cutting lawns with Ernesto?
I quit. My jazz career is taken off. Here's some of my early royalties.
I don't like jazz, especially when I get it all over my face. Wait, I'm thinking of adult contemporary.
Oh my God.
Poor Jasmine is.
How did you guys
fainting
get that
in the corner?
You gonna play that?
Yeah.
That's funny. And at the end, his bud's wife says, and your jazz album hit the top of the charts. You sold 7 copies.
Oh,
it's true. It's true.
Everyone loves jazz. No one buys it, unfortunately. That's what it boils down to. Again, punch up, not down.
Okay, guys, what is going on with the future? What's happening? What's going to happen next with the show?
That's what we're waiting to find out. So far, the ratings have been pretty good, considering we've gotten next to no promotion, and we're put on pretty late at night, considering, probably half of our audience is already asleep by 9:30 at night. But we're getting a lot of good feedback from fans. So far, Fox says that they want to commit to letting the show not get canceled, which is a start. But so far, we don't have a season 2 yet. And the only way we can get a season 2 is by getting good ratings, or at the very least, having a passionate fan base. You look at, what's Fox's ultimate cult comedy right now? Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers took a while for it to get established. Its ratings weren't really good when it really started, but what they had was a passionate fan base who wanted more. Fox had faith in the show, and eventually Bob's Burgers now became the beloved cult and critical hit that it is right now. The good thing is we share the same producer in Bento Box, so we're confident that as long as more viewers start watching us and just keep talking about us on Twitter and Facebook, that the Fox executives will grant us a second season.
Hashtag Bordertown.
Yes, hashtag Bordertown all over the place.
Guys, thanks so much for joining us today, man.
Oh, no, gracias
our pleasure.
For having us.
Yeah.
Lalo Alcaraz is consulting producer for Bordertown. He's an author and creator of La Cucaracha, a syndicated comic strip. Gustavo Arellano is consultant for Bordertown. He's the creator and writer of the syndicated column Ask a Mexican, and he's the editor of the OC Weekly. Again, guys, thank you so much. Continued success. And I think a show about two Latino radio hosts. Again.
Oh, in the works.
Yeah.
Who would play you?
You know? I think there's an episode there. I don't know.
If this show becomes successful, then Lalo and I could become producers, and we could talk shop later
on. There we go. Okay. Oh. Yeah. My people will call your people.
Basically, I'll call you. And guys, remind our listeners when they can catch your show, Bordertown.
You could catch us every Sunday at 9:30 on Fox at night, or you could catch us anytime on Hulu or Fox Now. And Lalo, give out the social media.
Hashtag Bordertown. Follow us on Twitter at Bordertown on Fox. And hit like. Like a lot.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. Make sure to leave your comments for Lalo and Gustavo. You guys will check in and answer, right?
Oh, we always do.
In a polite
way. Oh, yeah, they can't shut us.
Or in an NPR way. We'll do it in an NPR way.
In a soft tone. Sorry.
Measured.
Oh, one of those days. Anyways, thanks, guys.
We then send.
This has been Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
See you next week.